Welcome to our deep dive into the world of databases. You've sent over a ton of material on this, and we're here to help you navigate it all.
Yeah, databases are everywhere these days.
It really is mind-blowing. Databases are like the behind-the-scenes heroes of the digital world.
Absolutely. They power so much of what we do online.
From streaming music to booking
Even
appointments,
those people you may know, suggestions on social media.
it's all powered by databases. So where do we even begin with all this information?
Well, let's start with the most common type, relational databases.
Okay, relational
Think of a
databases.
relational database like a really well-organized library.
Okay, I like that.
It has tables, which are like bookshelves, each holding information about specific entities.
Entities.
An entity is just a fancy word for a thing,
Okay.
like a person, a place, or an object.
Got it.
Let's say we're looking at a vet clinic's database.
Okay.
They might have an animal table
Okay.
with columns for the animal's name, type, breed, and so on.
Like their medical history too, I imagine.
Yeah, all that good stuff.
Okay.
Each row in that table represents an individual animal,
Okay.
like your furry friend Buddy.
So if I have a cat named Whiskers,
Yes.
each row is like a file folder
That's a great way to put it.
holding all the details about Whiskers,
Exactly.
and the whole table's like a cabinet
Yeah.
full of those folders.
That's a really good analogy.
Okay, cool.
And the really cool thing about relational databases,
Guess that.
they can connect these tables through relationships,
Okay.
just like drawing lines between those library shelves.
Okay.
In our vet clinic example, we could connect the animal table to an owner table.
Showing who owns which pet.
Precisely.
So we can see all of Whiskers' information
Sure.
and then also see who her owner is,
Exactly.
all within the same database. That makes a lot of sense.
And to visualize those connections, we use something called an entity relationship diagram, or
Ooh,
ERD.
RAD.
It's like a blueprint of the database showing how everything fits together.
So it's kind of like a map of the database.
That's a good way to think about it.
Okay.
These relationships also have something called cardinality,
Cardinality, what's that?
which describes how many entities are linked on each side.
Okay.
For example, one owner could have multiple pets,
Yeah.
but each pet ideally only has one owner.
Makes sense.
It's called a one-to-many relationship.
One to many. Okay. I get it.
It's pretty straightforward.
Okay, but what about those times when you have data that's not so neat and tidy? Like, what about social media posts or sensor readings?
Right.
Those don't seem like they would fit neatly into rows and columns.
You're right.
They seem kind of messy.
And that's where non-relational databases come in.
Okay, non-relational databases.
They handle unstructured data that doesn't fit the traditional model.
The more I learn about databases, the more I realize
What's that?
there's like a specific type of database for every situation.
It seems that way, right?
Yeah. So, okay, back to non-relational databases.
One type is a key value database,
Key value database.
which works like tagging your photos with keywords.
Okay, I do that all the time.
Imagine a music streaming service.
Okay, I use this every day.
The song title is the key and the audio file is the value.
So it's like a giant digital storage locker
Exactly.
where everything is labeled for easy retrieval.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay.
Then you have document databases,
Document databases.
where each piece of data is treated like a separate document,
Okay.
similar to a patient's medical record.
So it's still labeled with keys, but
Yeah.
each entry can hold more complex information than a
Exactly.
simple value, like a whole paragraph or something.
Yeah. Potentially even more.
Wow, databases are powerful.
They really are.
What about when you have massive amounts of data, like for analyzing trends over time?
That's where column family databases excel.
Okay, column family databases.
They're designed to handle huge data sets and make it easy to analyze data within a single column across many rows.
So, like tracking stock prices over time,
Perfect example.
you'd want to see how a specific stock performed
Yes.
over a period of time.
Exactly.
A column family database is perfect for that.
It is.
Okay, I'm starting to get the hang of this.
Good.
What about graph databases?
Yes, graph
I
databases.
know those are getting a lot of attention these days.
They are very popular.
Why is that?
Well, graph databases are all about relationships.
Okay.
They excel at showing connections between data points.
So, like social media, the
Exactly.
people you may know feature.
That's powered by a graph database,
It is.
constantly analyzing connections between users.
Wow, that's fascinating.
It is pretty cool.
Okay, so just to recap, we've got relational databases for structured data
Right.
and non-relational databases for unstructured data. But how do we actually use these databases to do something useful?
That's a great question.
I'm full of them.
There are two main approaches, OLTP and OLAP.
OLTP and OLAP.
OLTP stands for Online Transactional Processing.
Online Transactional Processing.
It handles everyday actions like buying something online or booking a flight.
Okay.
It's all about processing small chunks of data quickly and efficiently.
So every time I buy something on Amazon,
yeah,
an OLTP database is making sure the transaction goes through smoothly.
That's right.
That's pretty important.
It is crucial for modern commerce.
I'm glad those databases are working hard for us.
Me too. Now, OLAP.
OLAP.
Stands for Online Analytical Processing.
Okay, Online Analytical Processing.
So that's where we get those aha moments.
I like those.
It's all about digging into larger data sets to uncover trends and patterns.
So OLTP is like the cashier ringing up your purchases.
Okay.
And OLAP is the business analyst figuring out what people are buying and why.
That's a good analogy.
Thanks. So where do we keep all this data that's been analyzed?
That's where data warehouses and data marts come in.
Okay, data warehouses and data marts.
Data warehouses are like giant storage hubs for an organization's data.
So it's like taking all those individual receipts from the CAF register and putting them into a central filing system.
Exactly.
Okay, and what about data marts?
Data marts are smaller, more focused subsets of a data warehouse.
Okay.
They're like specialty stores within the larger data warehouse, catering to the specific needs of different departments or teams.
So if the marketing team wants to analyze customer buying patterns,
yeah,
they'd go to the marketing data mart.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But before we can analyze anything,
right,
we need to get the data into these warehouses and marts in the first place.
That's a crucial step.
How does that happen?
There are a few ways to do it.
Like what?
Integration is like carefully moving furniture from one house to another.
Okay.
We take data from transactional systems and move it to the data warehouse.
So we're talking about taking data from different sources and putting it all together in one place.
Yeah, that's the idea.
That sounds complicated.
It can be, but there are tools to help.
What kind of tool?
Like ETL.
ETL, what's that stand for?
Extract, transform, load.
Okay, so it extracts the data from the source,
yep,
then transforms it into a format that can be used by the data warehouse.
Exactly.
And then loads it into the data warehouse.
That's the process.
So ETL is like the moving company that packs up all the data, cleans it up, and then unloads it in the new data warehouse.
Perfect analogy.
I'm getting good at this.
You are.
Okay. What else? What other tools are there?
Well, then there are APIs.
APIs.
Which are like universal translators allowing different systems to talk to each other and share data.
So that's how my phone app gets weather data.
Exactly.
Or displays a map.
Yep. It's talking to other systems through APIs.
APIs are like the diplomats of the data world.
I like that.
Facilitating communication between different systems.
Very well said.
Okay. So we've got integration and APIs.
Yes.
What if the data we need isn't neatly packaged and available through an API?
That happens sometimes.
What do we do then?
That's where web scraping comes in.
Web scraping. Okay.
Imagine tiny robots scouring websites, collecting specific pieces of information we need.
So it's like we're sending out these little data scavengers.
It's a fun way to think about it.
To gather the information we need.
Exactly.
But I imagine there are ethical considerations with web scraping.
Oh, absolutely.
We need to be respectful of websites.
Definitely.
And not overload them with requests.
Yes, and we always need to respect their terms of service.
Right. It's important to be a good data citizen.
I agree.
So we've got all this data in our database. Now, what?
Now the fun begins.
How do we actually work with it?
There's a whole set of tools and techniques for that.
Like what?
One of the most common ways is through CRUD operations. Create, read, update, delete.
CRUD.
Those are the basic actions we perform on data within a database.
So like adding new data.
That's creating.
Viewing existing data.
That's reading.
Modifying data and removing data. CRU got it. And to interact with that data, we use SQL.
That's right. SQL is the language of databases.
It lets us retrieve and manipulate data.
Using commands like select from and where.
That's starting to sound a bit more technical.
It is, but don't worry, we'll break it down.
Okay, good, because I need all the help I can get.
We'll dive deeper into the power of SQL in the next part of our deep dive.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm already starting to see how SQL can help us unlock all those valuable insights hidden within our data.
It's an incredibly powerful tool.
And we're just getting started.
That's right. There's so much more to explore.
This is exciting.
I think so, too.
Okay, so last time we were talking about all sorts of databases, like the relational kind that keep things neat and tidy, and the non-relational ones.
Right.
The ones that handle the messier side of data.
The unstructured stuff.
Exactly. We also touched on how all that data actually gets into those databases in the first place.
Right. Integration APIs, web scraping, all
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So it feels like we built the foundation for a pretty impressive data house, but now...
What's that?
Now we need to figure out how to furnish it.
Ah, I like that analogy.
Right. So that's where SQL comes in, right?
Exactly. Think of SQL as the language that lets you talk to your database.
Okay, the language of databases.
It's how you ask questions and get answers from all that data you've collected.
Okay, so it's like I'm having a conversation with the database.
In a way, yes.
Using SQL.
SQL is the key.
So it's like a super-powered search function?
Yeah, you could say that.
But specifically designed for databases.
It's much more powerful than a simple keyword search, though.
Really?
With SQL, you can filter data based on all sorts of criteria.
So give me an example.
Let's say you're back at that vet clinic we talked about.
Okay.
And you need to find all the golden retrievers in their database.
All the golden retrievers?
SQL lets you do that.
Easily.
With just a few simple commands.
Wow, so I could find all the golden retrievers who are over 10 years old, or all the dogs who haven't been in for a checkup in the past year.
You got it. SQL gives you that kind of flexibility.
That's so helpful.
It's a really powerful tool for managing and analyzing data.
Okay, so SQL can help me find specific records.
Uh-huh.
But can it do more than just that?
Oh, absolutely.
Like what?
You could also use it to sort data.
Sort data.
Remember how we talked about organizing data in those relational databases?
With the tables and the columns and all that.
Exactly. Well, the SQL, you can rearrange that data however you want.
So it's like sorting your music library?
Yeah, a perfect analogy.
Alphabetically by artist.
Or chronologically by release date.
Same idea, but applied to my database.
Precisely.
So if the vet clinic wanted to send out birthday cards to all their canine clients, they could use SQL to sort their database by dog birthdays.
You got it. SQL lets you slice and dice your data however you need to.
This is amazing.
It's a very versatile language.
What else can SQL do?
We can also use it to perform calculations on your data.
Calculations? Like what kind of calculations?
Like finding the average age of all the dogs in the database.
Okay.
Or the total number of appointments scheduled for next week.
So SQL is like a built-in calculator for my data.
That's a great way to think about it.
This is really powerful stuff.
It is.
But I have to admit, all this technical talk about queries and commands,
yeah,
it's starting to make my head spin a little.
I understand it can seem overwhelming at first.
A little bit. Yeah.
But remember, you don't need to be a coding whiz to use SQL effectively.
That's good to know.
There are lots of resources and tools available to help you.
Really?
And there are even visual interfaces that let you build queries without writing any code at all.
So you don't even need to know how to code to use SQL.
Not necessarily.
That's amazing.
It's becoming much more user-friendly.
Okay, so I'm feeling a bit better about SQL now.
Good.
But what happens when I need to dig deeper and ask more complicated questions?
That's where things get really interesting. SQL has a whole arsenal of advanced techniques for tackling those complex challenges.
Like what?
One of those techniques is called a subquery.
Subquery.
Which is basically... a query within a query.
A query within a query.
It's like those Russian nesting dolls.
Okay.
Where you open one doll to find another one inside.
So instead of just finding all the golden retrievers, I could use a subquery to find all the golden retrievers who have visited the clinic at least 3 times in the past year.
You got it. Subqueries give you a lot more flexibility and power when you're working with data.
That makes sense.
Another powerful technique is using window functions.
Window functions, okay.
These functions let you perform calculations on a specific window of data.
A window of data.
Without having to change the overall structure of your results.
So it's like having a dynamic spreadsheet.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it.
That can automatically calculate things like running totals.
Or rank values within a specific group.
That's incredibly helpful.
It is. It's a very powerful technique.
So SQL is even more powerful than I thought.
It really is a very versatile and powerful language.
But I'm also realizing that working with large amounts of data can be quite challenging.
Oh, absolutely.
Just the sheer volume of information.
It can be overwhelming.
It's like trying to drink from a fire hose.
That's a great analogy.
How do you even begin to make sense of all that information?
That's where big data analytics comes in.
Okay, big data analytics.
It's a whole field dedicated to tackling the unique challenges of working with massive data sets.
Massive data set? Like how massive are we talking?
We're talking about data sets so large
that
traditional data processing tools simply can't handle them.
Wow, so it's like needing a bigger truck
to
haul all those logs.
You need specialized tools and techniques to handle big data.
So what kind of tools and techniques are we talking about?
Well, big data analytics involves using specialized software and hardware, along with sophisticated algorithms and statistical models, to extract meaningful insights from those massive data sets.
Give me an example.
Think about companies like Amazon or Google, who are processing millions of transactions and user interactions every single day.
Yeah, they're dealing with a lot of data.
They rely heavily on big data analytics to understand user behavior, optimize their services, and even personalize your online experience.
Wow. So big data analytics is happening all around us.
It is. It's becoming increasingly important in our data-driven world.
But I imagine there are some significant challenges involved.
There are definitely challenges.
Like what?
One of the biggest challenges is simply finding the right talent.
Talent?
Big data analytics requires a highly specialized skill set.
I can imagine.
And there's a shortage of qualified professionals in the field.
So it's not just about having the right technology.
Right.
You also need the right people to make sense of it all.
Absolutely.
What other challenges are there?
Well, then there's the challenge of data quality.
Data quality?
With so much data coming from so many different sources,
yeah,
it can be difficult to ensure that the data is accurate, complete, and consistent.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly. You can't make good decisions with bad data.
And what about data security?
Oh, that's a huge concern.
Yeah, because with so much sensitive information being stored in databases,
right,
it's absolutely crucial to have robust security measures in place.
It is. We need to protect that data from unauthorized access, cyber attacks, and data breaches.
Data breaches can have devastating consequences.
Absolutely. They can ruin reputations and cost companies millions.
It sounds like working with big data is not for the faint of heart.
It's definitely a challenging field, but it's also incredibly rewarding.
In what way?
Because you're working with information that can be used to make a real difference in the world.
Yeah. We've seen how it's being used in healthcare.
Right.
But what about other areas like education, environmental protection, or even addressing poverty and social inequality?
That's a great question. And it's something we'll explore in the final part of our deep dive.
Wow, we've really covered a lot of ground in this deep dive, from the different types of databases and how they work, to the power of SQL, and even all the complexities of working with big data.
We've been on quite a journey.
But now I'm really excited to shift gears and talk about how all of this technology can be used to make a positive impact on the world.
Yeah, this is where it gets really inspiring. Last time we were talking about how databases are transforming healthcare, but that's really just the beginning.
So what other areas are being impacted by this data revolution?
Well, let's talk about education. Imagine a world where each student has a learning experience tailored to their unique strengths and weaknesses.
That would be incredible. Every student would have the opportunity to reach their full potential.
Exactly. And that's the promise of data-driven education. By carefully tracking student progress and pinpointing areas where they need extra support, we can create personalized learning paths for every student.
It's like having a custom-designed tutor for every child.
That's a great way to put it. And it's not just about personalized learning. Databases can also be used to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of entire education systems.
How so?
Well, by analyzing data on student performance, teacher effectiveness, and even resource allocation, we can make more informed decisions about things like curriculum development and school funding.
So we can create smarter, more adaptable education systems that can meet the evolving needs of students and society.
Exactly.
This is amazing. So we've got healthcare and education. What other areas are being positively impacted by databases?
Well, one area that's particularly close to my heart is environmental protection. Databases are being used in incredible ways to help us understand and protect our planet.
I can see how data would be really important for things like tracking deforestation and monitoring pollution levels.
Absolutely. By collecting and analyzing vast amounts of environmental data, scientists and policymakers can make more informed decisions about conservation efforts, pollution control, and sustainable development.
It's like having a global dashboard that gives us real-time insights into the health of our planet.
I love that analogy. And it's not just about monitoring and analysis. Databases are also powering really innovative solutions for environmental protection. Think about things like smart grids that optimize energy consumption, or precision agriculture techniques that reduce waste and boost crop yields.
So we're using data to create a more sustainable future for generations to come.
That's the goal.
This is incredible. But what about addressing social issues like poverty and inequality? Can databases make a difference in those areas?
Absolutely. Databases are being used in incredibly creative ways to empower communities and improve people's lives. For example, some organizations are using data to track the spread of disease, identify vulnerable populations, and deliver aid and resources where they're needed most.
So data can help us get help to the people who need it most.
Exactly. And it's not just about providing aid. Databases are also helping to empower communities by giving them access to information and a voice in decision-making processes.
So how does that work?
Well, think about things like citizen science projects that use crowdsourced data to track pollution levels or monitor the spread of invasive species.
So everyday citizens are contributing to scientific research and helping to protect their communities.
That's right. And there are also platforms that allow people to report issues, share their experiences, and even engage in dialogue with local governments.
It sounds like databases are playing a key role in making information more accessible and giving people the tools they need to advocate for themselves and their communities.
It's very empowering.
We've covered so many amazing examples, but I'm curious, what's next for the world of databases? What exciting developments are on the horizon?
Well, the world of databases is constantly evolving, with new technologies and approaches emerging all the time. One area that I'm particularly excited about is the integration of artificial intelligence and machine learning with database systems.
So we're not just storing and organizing data anymore. We're using that data to make predictions, solve problems, and create entirely new possibilities.
Exactly. AI and machine learning are already transforming fields like medical diagnosis, financial forecasting, and even personalized marketing. And as these technologies continue to evolve, I think we're only just scratching the surface of what's possible.
It sounds like we're entering a whole new era of data-driven innovation. This has been an amazing deep dive. But before we wrap up, what final thought would you leave our listeners with?
I would say, never underestimate the power of data. It has the potential to unlock solutions to some of humanity's most complex challenges, connect us in new ways, and create a brighter future for everyone. But with this power comes a responsibility to use data ethically, responsibly, and always keep in mind the human impact of our decisions.
Data is a powerful tool, and it's up to all of us to use it wisely. Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey into the world of databases. We hope you've enjoyed exploring this amazing and ever-evolving field. And remember, stay curious, keep learning, and keep diving deep.